Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning. Well, in the first session, we had one speaker missing because of ill health. In the second session, we had a virtual speaker. But you'll be pleased to know that you've got a double act here, so you get two for the price of one. So I suppose the question to ask really is whether you're getting, if that's efficiency or waste or best value. So on over to you. Have you got the... Oh, got a different one, sorry. Wasn't like the one in the practice. Okay, my name's Penny McCart. I'm the Transport Services Manager for Northamptonshire County Council. Currently, my remit is the whole of the planning side, the financial side of it, and for my sins, the fleet transport as well, the in-house fleet. Previously working with Paul, which is why I invited him along today as well. He's the contracts manager, and previously we worked together on this project, so we wanted to share our views and our information. Basically, what we're saying is we haven't got the monopoly on all the good ideas. We've got some ideas we want to share. We'd like to develop the discussion around it and show you what we've found when we've been looking at the way we procure transport. So, at the moment, we do the procurement for mainstream, SEN and public bus contracts and social care and health as well. We have over 700 contracts. Now, you can argue the vagaries about whether you have a cluster or groups of contracts, but actually, the way we're set up, we run all our own contracts individually. We transport to over 200 schools countywide. In Northamptonshire, there's about 350 schools in the county. There's social care and health transport. We have about 1,600 passengers, customers that travel some very frequently, some infrequently. And the total cost of the transport, and that is including the social care and health side as well, is around £16 million. Of that, it's about £12 million for schools, and roughly split half and half between SEN and mainstream. So I'm guessing that we'll be similar to quite a few of you other local authorities in that. Nearly 80 fleet vehicles, quite a large fleet for the size of the county. It's something that's grown over the years, and it's something that we're looking to sort of address in perhaps putting more of that type of transport out to the external markets. About 50 drivers and 200 passenger assistants. Paul and I were looking at the way that we procured transport and things like this and the things that were happening. And we decided that we needed to make a change. We were looking at escalating transport costs, concerns over quality and compliance. And it's not to say that we were doing things badly, but people are becoming much more discerning about their transport. We were getting more awareness raised about issues and things like this. So we felt we needed to deal with that. And then as well, because of the several changes in legislation, the Disability Discrimination Act and Equalities Act and things like that, we knew that we had to update our own terms and conditions and the contract documentation generally to reflect the changing needs. And we needed a quicker way to procure contracts and greater flexibility that, you know, we didn't want to be tied into sort of 3-month notice periods, which is what Paul and I inherited, and that when we had a demand for transport, we wanted to be able to act quickly and turn it round more quickly. So we were looking at things like that. And to a degree, not so much with the mainstream, the SEN transport, when with buses and taxi and private hire, but with the social care and health transport, they knew that if we were ringing up at 8:30 in the morning for a journey, that we were largely stuck and we were held to ransom with prices and things like that. So we wanted something set, not necessarily in tablets of stone, because we still negotiate with the operators, but some idea of pricing. It was a big issue for our care managers and our social workers. And we needed to engage with the operators a bit more and help them understand the nature of our work required. Very often they couldn't understand why we're making a journey across the county to take one child to a pupil referral unit or to a special needs school, and they didn't see that there was anything, in inverted commas, wrong with that child. They didn't understand the nature of the children that they were that we were transporting, and that was an issue for us. Right, okay. So we decided we needed to do something about it. Just prior to that all happening, Northamptonshire County Council introduced the Bravo electronic tendering process. Our corporate procurement people organised a contract around that, and they were dying to try it out. And we thought, well, we could perhaps use that to look at our own tendering for public transport and for the school transport. So we ran a pilot in 2009 for one transport area. Paul will give you more information, but the long and the short of it was really that we looked at 14 contracts that were all up for renewal at the end of the school year, for the new school year, and we had nearly 30% savings on those contracts alone, which is a big chunk of money. We're somewhat motivated by that, as you can imagine. There'd been a lot of discussion about reverse auctions and electronic tendering, but we'd had our little bite of success there, and we thought we'd try and take it a bit further. As well as that, our integrated transport management unit was committed to a further budget saving for 2010. I think from memory it's something like £750,000, which is a big chunk, especially when it's statutory spend. And our other neighbouring local authorities, a couple of them had already tried using e-tendering. The upshot was, I think they'd had the same sort of savings and benefits as we'd had, but the feedback that we were getting, the leakage through the transport operators, was that they got some concerns about the new way of tendering, that they would go out of business if we continued to cut the costs in the way that we have and that. So we wanted to adopt a positive approach with the transport providers and show them the benefits of using an e-tendering process. So, in 2009-10, we used the tendering process. We also introduced for the first time quality scores. So we looked at 60% price, 40% quality, and worked on the basis of that. So the tenders that came through weren't necessarily the cheapest, but we got the quality as well built into that for the first time. And it actually, from a customer point of view, when people say, I know you always go for the cheapest transport, we can actually say we don't, because we look at the quality as well as the price as well. We felt the need to run training sessions for the transport operators because many of them didn't have computer experience. When we were dealing with them, often it was over the phone or by letter, which was slow. And we really saw this as the first steps, really, to getting them computer literate and using the technology that's available to make us swifter and smarter as well. So we ran two training sessions. 86 people attended from taxi and private hire and some of our bus companies. That was very successful. And then alongside that, we ran a sort of our regular tendering for the other 94 contracts, saving of about 12% that year on those. But for the area with the 14 contracts, we managed to make savings of nearly 30%, which is quite phenomenal for a first with that. We were the first department within Northamptonshire County Council to attempt that. So we were very pleased with that and have been using that to promote as a model. Right. Before I hand over to Paul, what we decided to do was, because we were concerned about the quality as well as the savings, so driving down savings is fine, but you've still got to maintain the quality, we decided to work through framework agreements. So we did one for home-to-school transport with social care and health, for minibuses, taxis and private hire for longer-term contracts, one for public bus, and then another one for ad hoc journeys, which again gave us the flexibility to pick up and do ad hoc journeys. It might take a little while before we can fit Jason or Johnny onto a journey, but what we have is the ad hoc, so that we can actually quickly pick up a journey for a child when they come through the admission system or a referral from our colleagues in SEN, so that they can be put on transport fairly quickly and back into the school system. We did a complete revamp of all the contract documents. As I mentioned earlier, we hadn't caught up with legislation. There were other things that we wanted to reflect. And we wanted to engage with our partners, our colleagues in Children and Young People Service and in Social Care and Health, to make sure that what we were going out to tender for was actually what they wanted in terms of transport provision. Building on that, we went out and trained and marketed to all the transport operators. We did quite a lot of that information because we wanted to engage with people that weren't providing transport for us. We were wanting to, particularly for things like community transport, and seeing if we could pick up things like that. And as a result of that, because that was so successful with particularly the Bravo training and things like that, we've gone on to do further training for drivers and escorts in terms of safer recruitment and safeguarding training. We run a newsletter for our transport providers. So as and when we have some new information, or if we want to encourage anything in a particular area, if we have, we're short of passenger assistance, it's an article for the newsletter, and it's a prompt for them to give them an indication of which way the market in Northamptonshire is going. We reviewed the role of the transport compliance team. The focus changed, and Paul will go on and tell you a bit about that. And then we used the lessons from 2009 and 10 in terms of what we learnt from the e-tendering process then and the way people behave in terms of e-tendering, a bit like eBay in reverse, to actually build the project for the future. I'll hand you over to Paul now because he'll give you a rundown on bit more of the detailed and the technical side, and then I'll go back through the future requirements after that. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. One of the main things that we learnt from the pilot scheme was that communication was very key in getting our operators on board and also getting across our requirements for our contracts and the frameworks. Now, what we actually did with this was we placed, obviously used a lot of local media, advertisements, articles, basically to get interest, not just from the operators that we already knew, but those that were just new into the business. Those that we had obviously were aware, we devised a newsletter which kind of went through some of the stuff that we'd got on the contracts, but also was highlighting the new ways of procuring. Now, we sent this out to 378 operators. Of these, only 288 were actually sent out to via email, which meant the rest were sent out via paper base. Now, what we actually said in the newsletter was, we are going to communicate, we're going to electronically tender now and use electronic process. So this will be like the last type of paper base that we will send out to you. Therefore, you need to contact us and give us your details so that we can go through this process. Now, obviously a key part of this is not just communicating to the external operators, it's also the communication and working with your internal partners and colleagues. So we did do a lot of partnership working with our procurement, corporate procurement teams, our legal teams, and obviously our software provider, Bravo. We also had a quite in-depth consultation with our internal customers. Obviously, we had the planning team that would be involved in this, but also our partners in Children and Young People Services and Health and Social Services. What we were doing with these frameworks as well was also making sure that we built in the ability for other public bodies to have use of them. And we're actually going to one of these with regards to one of the particular frameworks. Now, from the pilot scheme, we've got to think that there's a lot of push where we've got to save money. And from the pilot scheme ending, and we put together a report on how things went, we were then tasked with going ahead with all these frameworks in November 2009 to have in place for June 2010. So on top of this, we also had a 50% reduction in our contracts team as well. So we were pretty much up against it before it even started. But the way that we actually done this is, firstly, we went about setting up an ad hoc framework. Now, an ad hoc framework is basically for all the ad hoc journeys. These are journeys that are just needed on the day, very quick, and they won't last for anything past 6 weeks. Now, previously, what we found is that we would go to a company for a particular journey and say, right, we want it to happen. Okay, this time it's going to be £50. We went to them 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. They knew that we were absolute desperate for this journey to take place. Oh, it's £100. And there was never any consistency with what we were getting charged. Now, what we wanted to do is, you know, we wanted to know, can we afford to do the journey before we actually go out and confirm it and go ahead? So This ad hoc journey was about the operators giving us a price per mile, per passenger mile. Because operators will quite easily put in, well, I've got a lot of dead minors to put in here and there. We don't, when you've got a social worker that's phoning up an operator, they're not going to know where the operator is based. So they all they know is where the passenger is being picked up and where they're being delivered, and they'll know roughly how much mileage it will be. Now, to get this across to our operators, it was a quite a hard task. We did get quite a lot of, quite a lot of feedback from it. try and put that quite politely. But we held 8 seminars around the actual county, of which 121 operators attended. The outcome of this is that obviously it was put in place. It's now being used as a corporate framework. So everyone within Northamptonshire County Council now is aware of this ad hoc framework and is using it for whatever journey that they need to take. Other users as well include local colleges that obviously do post-16 transport. And also as well, the NHS are kind of dabbling at the moment. They kind of want to join in and come in, but they're not entirely sure about it at the moment. Now, how we actually ranked the operators was quite unique, how they'd put in their price, but we also brought in the element of the quality. So what we actually then was able to do for each area, the operators designated that they were interested in, we were able to then calculate using a formula that we put in our tendering documents, that basically we were then able to rank them. So instead of going down the yellow pages and beforehand people go, oh yeah, or this is an operator that I've always used, there was a pre-approved list that had been checked, had all the CRBs, the insurances, all the licences pre-checked before they even phoned them up. And then, obviously, they go down the list, can you do this? Because there was a lot of people that are obviously using this, obviously, quite often the first one would be used up quite quickly. So they were then able to go down, and then they knew how much their journey was going to cost. So if they got further down the list and they think, well, it's going to be too much now, can I do it, or do I actually have to go ahead with it? So that was the first part of this project. The second part was regards to putting together frameworks that would be mainly for our contractual side of things. Now, we separated and had a planned passenger framework and then a public transport framework, because there are, with regards to the contract requirements, though they're transporting people, the actual requirements are quite different if you actually look into them. Now, because on this one, we're also going to be doing e-auctioning and introduce an e-auction, we carried out further e-auction training with our colleagues in procurement and Bravo. Now, the main reason for this is a lot of the operators were coming to us and saying, no, I have never used a PC before. I do not know the internet. People that were, had never even been to their library. So what we were doing is we were pinpointing them, if you don't have a PC, here you go to a library. And we'd done all this training, and after the e-auctions actually finished, we had a lot of stories where some of the operators had got their grandchildren to actually do the e-auctions for them. All right, so they found ways of doing it. So no matter what, it's about getting across to the operators, I am the customer, this is how I am going to do it. If you want my contracts, this is what you need to do. Okay, so there was a total of 285 contracts that we actually e-auctioned that year. A total of 22 e-auctions were carried out over a period of 11 days in June and July. And how we actually done the starting prices was looked at the current costs, added on a certain percentage for inflation, put that as the e-auction. Now, these obviously did get us quite considerable savings. In 2010-2011, we had a combined savings of annual savings of 1.4 million. The last year, we had about 20 contracts, and we had about a net annual savings of 190,000. every time that we e-auction a contract that hasn't already been e-auctioned, we're getting approximately 30% savings on our annual prices. Now, one of the big questions that obviously everyone was saying was, you're going down the e-auction route, and what about the quality? Because all you're concerned about is the price. Now, what we actually had is a compliance team that now we changed their whole direction. They now go and audit all new operators prior to them entering onto the framework agreement. So we have them tendered. We have the framework agreement in place. Before any contracts are given to them under those framework agreements, they are checked, and then annually thereafter. Our emphasis now is on quality and compliance to contract schedules as well as cost. Now, this is what the key part that we've got to go get across. E-auctions, okay, they get the cost down, but at what cost to the authority? And we have to limit the cost to the actual authority in both ways. Now, we've actually looked at our processes, and we've now made an improved audit trail for all our contract monitoring. And in ways that we're now developing a new system, which is a bit like a green light, traffic light system. A lot of people already heard and is maybe using the traffic light system. But basically, it's a way then that we can start becoming proactive when identifying certain issues and how operators, not just on the contracts, but on the framework overall, and then having a look at those operators and then dealing with them before things get out of hand. Alongside this now, we're also having greater working relationships with our licensing authorities, VOSA and local police. As I said, the focus has changed. Beforehand, our inspectors used to go out, and what they used to do is say, oh, have you got a bus pass? Are you eligible to go on this bus? And used to do a few little checks round on the bus to say, oh, the fire exit works. Yeah, that's okay. But now we've gone away from that to emphasise on what the operator should be doing on our contracts, and as well looking at student behaviours. So if a student gets onto the bus, they're not supposed to be on there. Well, it's not about going to the child and saying you shouldn't be on. It's about also going to the operator and saying, you didn't check the path. Why didn't you check the path? Why didn't you check and make sure they should have been on that transport? Now, one of the things Penny mentioned about earlier is the free training. And to make sure the quality is actually improved. This had never been done with our operators before, but they'd never looked at safeguarding. We started to do some training in conjunction with our safeguarding team. We'd done a whole training course, and we recently had 8 forms countywide and trained 65 people. Now, we've had a good feedback from this, and we had quite a lot of operators saying, "Whoa, what do I need to know about safeguarding? I've been doing this job for 25 years. And then coming out of that training going, oh, I didn't realise. Now, we've all had these instances where you have taxi operators where they allow a child to be sat in the front, and we're starting to see more and more of these incidents reported. So the training for safeguarding was key with regards to improving the quality of our contracts and making sure that if they didn't have a contract, that they were aware what they were getting themselves into. We also currently do Operation Educate in conjunction with the police, VOSA and licensing authorities. Last year, March 2011 alone, 48 school transport checks were carried out. Of this, 5 were given verbal warnings and 4 vehicles were taken off the road for defective tyres. Now, this is not just about working partnership, but it's also given a visual indication to all the parents and the schools that we do take these things seriously, and there is this partnership working. We're also our compliance team now are going out to the licensing authority induction days for all taxi and private hire drivers, and actually going through what is required for our contracts and also emphasising on the safeguarding element as well. I think now it's hand over to Penny.
Okay.
Thanks. Well, I hope you found that really interesting. I mean, probably some of you are doing some elements of that, or maybe all of those ideas. What I'd like to just briefly round up on is the way forward. So we're talking about further training for operators. That's been a big success in terms of compliance and also customer feedback, because we're getting now clued up taxi and private hire drivers, and they are recruiting their own passenger assistants. Still can't keep up with the numbers of passenger assistants that we need, but that's a really positive way of actually starting to prepare the market for a potential downsizing of the fleet side of things, and actually preparing the market to take on some of those roles. And we are working with the schools, especially the SEN schools, to start to provide training on autism and specific additional needs for students. It's early days yet, but as and when we do that, we're starting to identify passenger assistants who want to work with particular customers and may need some extra training. I trained one recently on using oxygen for a child that was having seizures, and we went through a risk assessment and the procedures for a potential seizure if the oxygen administration didn't work. And all these things are really positive things, because we're getting good feedback from it and building relationships with the parents as well. We are currently revising the ad hoc framework agreement, looking at more dynamic procurement systems for framework agreements and the like, so we can bring people in along the way rather than the very wooden process of setting the framework agreement up and then perhaps losing people along the way as they opt out or we decide that they're not suitable for that type of work. We're looking at a sort of more dynamic process with that. Potential link-up. Paul mentioned working with the other bodies. We've got some work with the colleges, but we're also working with the NHS and the PCTs to help encourage them to use our frameworks as well. And, of course, the academies and the schools, because if they're buying into the same framework, then we've got some consistency across the market. If the academies start to go out and procure transport themselves, then it can distort the market and we can, you know, it can cause a problem in terms of consistency across the services. Marketing of our service to the education establishments, we want them to build on our contracts as well. So if they need extra journeys during the day, then why not tag it onto what's already there, and perhaps we can make some efficiencies there. And all of our social services journeys are either on fleet or on contracts. My bullet point there wasn't quite right, but that's what I'm saying. And actually, the big debate about e-auctions, reverse auctions, goes on. Do you use them to target specifically to bring down costs phenomenally, or should they be an everyday tool rather than using mini competitions to create that flexibility? With certainly thinking along with our corporate procurement people about whether we use them as a tool instead of mini competitions, we have a reverse auction and make it much more dynamic in terms of the way we procure transport. Hope you found it interesting, and be interested to hear some feedback from all of you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.